evening, ladies and gentlemen, and a very warm welcome to the 30th West Sound Burn Supper. Please put your hands together for the Scottish Fire and Rescue Service Pipe Band under the direction of their new pipe major, Ali McLaughlin. So let's get the show on the road by asking one of the nation's favourite radio presenters, Ali Bally, to say grace.
Thank you very much indeed, and a very good evening. I've been in radio some 30-odd years and have waited on that phone call for over 30 years to ask me to do something at the West Sound Burn Supper. I didn't mind what it was. I would have collected the glasses, but I've been asked this year, which is great, the 30th year, to do the Selkirk Grace. Some he meets and canna eat, and some would eat that want it. But we he meet and we can eat, so let the Lord be thanked. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Robert Burns World Federation organised a junior Burnsian competition allowing school children to showcase their understanding and affinity with the works of Burns in poetry, music or song. And tonight, I'm delighted to say that the haggis will be addressed by the 2014 winner of the junior Burnsian title, 11-year-old Kirsty Duncan from Aberdeen.
Your honour, sonsy face, great chieftain o' the pudding race, I boon them a' ye tak your place, pinch, tripe or therm, weel are ye worthy o' a grace as lang's my arm. The groaning trencher there ye fell, your heart is like a distant hill, your pen was help to mend a mill in time o' need. While through your pores the juice distill like amber bead. His knife see rustic labour dicht and cut ye up wee ready slicht, trenching your gushing entrails bricht like ony ditch. And then, oh, what a glorious sicht, warm reeking rich. Then horn for horn they stretch and strive, deal tack the hindmost on they drive, till ah, their wheels swelled kites belive are bent like drums. Then auld gateman, mace like to rive, be thank it hums. Is there that o'er his French ragout, or olio that would staw sue, or fricassee, what mak her spew, we perfect scorner, looks down, we sneer in scorn for view, on sick a dinner. Poor devil, Seymour is trash, as feckless as a withered rash, his spindle shank a good whiplash, his knee a knit, through bloody flood or field to dash, oh how unfit. But mark the rustic haggis fed, the trembling earth sounds his tread, clapping his wally neve a blade, he'll mak it whistle, and legs and arms and heads will sned like taps o' thristle. Ye powers wha mak mankind your care, and dish them out their bill o' fare, auld Scotland wants nae skinking wear that jocks and luggies. But if you wish her grateful prayer, gie her a haggis.
Thank you very much indeed, Kirsty. That was fantastic.
Thank you.
Now, I told you earlier that you were in for a great night's entertainment. There was nothing Burns himself liked better than a good night out. And who can blame him when you see the rubbish that's on the telly? To get the formal part of tonight's proceedings underway, I'd like to welcome back to the West Sound Burns Supper my good friend Willie Allen, who will propose the principal toast of the evening, which is, of course, the immortal memory. Willie is a school teacher to trade, as is my dearly beloved wife Margot, who's here tonight. Unusual for her getting a chance to hear me speak. Hello. Other than where's my shirt? I'm glad she's here because her asthma is quite bad just now. Just last week, in the middle of an attack, she got an obscene phone call. And after a couple of minutes, the guy said, here, did I call you or did you call me? Ladies and gentlemen, please give the very best of West Sound order for one of Scotland's leading after-dinner speakers to propose the immortal memory, Mr. Willie Allen.
My good friend, Mr. Peter Brown, is going to toast the lassies later on. And of course, Peter, what a fantastic job you have in front of you, because the girls look fantastic. I can see many girls tonight have adopted that Sex in the City look. Just a shame the city is Dundee. I myself did a toast to the lassies last night in Glasgow. Didn't do especially well. A very heavy woman, a big woman, came up to the top table. The gym membership had obviously lapsed. I'll tell you how heavy she was. If you shot her into space, she'd still be heavy. And she came up and says, I want a word with you. What do you mean? I'm not racist. I'm not ageist. I'm not sexist. No, you're fattest. I think you'll find here you're fattest. But here we are in the Burn Supper season, as we call it in Fife, the season of Ramadram. And last year, I did an immortal memory down in London. They didn't quite get it. They didn't understand the accent. In fact, the audience had the same look in their face as Captain Hook had when he wiped his backside with the wrong hand. Robert Burns was born in Alloway near Ayr on the 25th of January in 1759. He was to die at the tender age of 37 on July 21st, 1796. Now, is there anything else you feel you have to know? Well, let's bash on, shall we? But seriously, where did the man's motivation to write poetry and songs stem from? After all, he was the son of an Ayrshire cotter, very humble beginnings. A cotter is a Scots word for a tenant, occupying a cottage with or without land attached to it, or a married farm worker who has a cottage as part of his contract. Burns himself wrote, "The poetic genius of my country found me at the plough and threw her inspiring mantle over me. She bade me sing the loves, the joys, the rural scenes and rural pleasures of my native soil in my native tongue." Burns is quoted as saying that he rhymed for fun or for his friends. He wrote, "No mercy bard his homage pays. With honest pride I scorn each selfish end. My dearest meed of friend's esteem and praise." Now, Burns has been described as a ploughman's poet, but that conceals the fact that he was exceptionally well-educated. He attended a school which his father and some other neighbours had set up at their own expense. His reading was extensive. He was to master a vocabulary of between 12 and 13,000 words. But despite all the classics, he said that the book that gave him the most pleasure was the history of Sir William Wallace. He was also given grounding in French, mathematics and geometry. He began to write occasional verses when he was still at school. His spare time was fully employed on the ailing farm as labourer and ploughman. Back-breaking work. I can associate with the school being a teacher myself. In fact, I was asked at my job interview, give me two good reasons why I became a school teacher. I said July and August. In fact, ladies and gentlemen, my own school, Buckhaven High School outside Methil in the Kingdom of Fife, Methil has just been twinned with Las Vegas. In both towns you can get sex for chips. Now, much has been written about Burns the philosopher, and Rabbi himself will give us to your mouse later on. The best laid schemes of mice and men gang after glee. Obviously, if mice and men was used by Steinbeck. We also have philosophy classes at Buckhaven High School. A very eclectic mix at my school. We take kids from Upper Largo and London Links. They're a bit pan loaf up there. They think a crash is a collision between two cars. And in the philosophy class, Sandra from Upper Largo said, to be is to do. That's from Rousseau. Susan, London Link, said, to do is to be. John Paul Sartre. Tam from Ethel said, dooby dooby doo. Frank Sinatra. Now, it's little more than mentioning the written memoirs of Burns that the poet spent his 16th summer, 1775, in the parish of Kirkoswald, in the southern and more primitive district of Ayrshire. His father was a tenant of a small farm of Lochlea in the parish of Thurbolton. What seems to have suggested his going to Kirkoswald School was a connection of his mother with the parish. The coast in the neighbourhood of Burns' residence at Ballochneil presented a range of rustic characters upon whom his genius was destined to confer an ordinary interest. At the farmer's shanter, on a slope which overlooked the shore, lived Douglas Graham, a stout, hearty specimen of the Carrick farmer and a worthy and upright member of society and a kind-natured man. He had a wife called Helen MacTaggart, who was unusually addicted to superstitious beliefs and fears. It was Douglas Graham who was to become the inspiration for the character of Tam in Tam O'Shanter. Now, Janet Kennedy, who attended the school at Kirkoswald with Burns, made the following statement after his death. I well recollect seeing Burns seated at the end of a bench and seeming amused with Shanter's neighbours, joking him about the Alby witches, giving Douglas Graham and John Davidson a fright on their way home from Ayr New Year's Eve, where he had sold a horse and put a price on it in his broad blue bonnet, which had blown off his head going up Brown Carrick Hill among the goss. It was, he thought, a risk to meet his wife after such a mishap, as she was well known to have a scathing tongue when she thought to exercise on her husband, but at the same time, very superstitious, a firm believer in witchcraft. Her husband had to meet the emergency when he came home telling her what a narrow escape he and John Davis had made in the ride from the chase of the witches from Alloway Kirk. The next morning, his servant man was sent on his grey mare to seek, as directed, the lost bonnet, in which he was successful with all the money in it. This story was well known amongst the neighbours at that time, long before Burns painted it in poetry. And he went on to write his most famous poem, Tam O'Shanter. Ladies and gentlemen, you now have some idea where Burns got the inspiration for many of his most famous works. His mind was one huge sponge, able to soak up places, names, objects, and animals, then turn them into songs or verses. What a skill to have! Even something as insignificant as a bottle could be transformed into a verse which conveys not only poignancy, but a message to live each day as if it were one's last, Here's a bottle, an honest friend. What would you wish for Merman? What kens before his life may end? What his share may be a care man? Then catch the moments as they fly and use them as you ought, man. Believe me, happiness is shy and comes, not I, when sought, man. 8 lines of verse, ladies and gentlemen, which have for me become a raison d'etre. Believe me, happiness is shy and comes, not I, when sought, man. Who in the audience here tonight cannot associate with that particular message? Take one of my other favourite poems, The Twa Dugs. Now, Burns chose this work to open all editions of his poems, and it introduces many of his central concerns, the ties of mutual regard that connect all living things, and yet expressing anger at the enormous gulf between the busy and the idle, the needy and the privileged. These are themes which are relevant in today's society. Much has been written recently of the underclass which exists in Scotland. And as someone who chooses to teach in an area like Methil and Buckhaven, a huge amount of unemployment, lack of inward investment, not a lot for the kids to shoot for, these are themes which certainly strike a chord with me. Now, his own father, William Burns, faced a 2-year court battle in the Court of Session, contesting a writ which had been served by the landowners. Burns' father won the case but died shortly afterwards. The cost of the case and the accompanying stress had taken its toll. The tenancy was ended, and Robert and his brother moved the family to another farm. Burns himself wrote, "Poor tenant bodies scant the cash, how they must thole a factor's snash. He'll stamp and threaten, curse and swear, he'll apprehend them, point their gear. While they munched on with aspect humble, and hear it in fear and tremble." Yes, Burns championed the cause of the poor, but he was certainly astute enough to know that not all of the wealthy gentry were as wicked. He would have been incredibly proud if he could have known that more than 200 years after his death, his words would be used when the Scottish Parliament finally reconvened. Now let us pray that come it may, and come it will for a' that, that sent and worth, or a' the earth, shall bear the grief for a' that. For a' that and a' that, it's coming yet for a' that, that man to man, the world o'er, shall brothers be for a' that. Now, keeping on the dog theme, while Burns is at Moss Gael, he had a dog called Lewith, which is Gaelic for fast. Lewith was devoted to Burns and would follow him everywhere. When Burns went to a wedding, during the dancing, Lewith constantly jumped at his heels, and Burns himself said, "I wish I could get one of the lasses to like me as well as my dog does." A few days later, he was walking past Mauchline Green, where Jean Armour was spreading her washing, and Lewith jumped up on her clean sheets. Come off," cried Jean. Robert did. Jean looked at him and said, "Weel, Robin, have you got any lasses to like you as well as your dog did?" They married Jean shortly afterwards, but Jean's father refused to accept Burns as Jean's husband and had their marriage document destroyed. Jean, who was pregnant, was sent to stay with relatives. It appeared to Burns that Jean had ended the marriage. In order to complete the annulment, he went to the Kirk Session, spent 3 consecutive Sunday services doing penance on the curry stool, and obtained a certificate that he was a free man. Now that left him free to marry Bonnie Mary of Argyll, and he planned to emigrate with her to Jamaica. He sent a selection of poems to Kilmarnock for printing to finance the trip. Sadly, Mary died, and Jean produced twins, and the Kilmarnock edition was far more successful than he expected. He was suddenly acceptable to Jean's father. He cancelled the planned emigration and married Jean, in effect, for the second time. And he wrote, "Oh, the airts the wind can blow, I dearly love the west, for there the bonny lassie lives, the lassie I love best. There's well woods grow, and rivers row, and mony a hill between, but day and night my fancy's flight is ever with my Jean." Now, Burns and Jean had 9 children, but only 3 lived to become adults. Only one of these has survivors today. He is also known to have had 3 illegitimate children. The Burns loved all his children and ensured they were well cared for. Jean showed her dedication to Robert as she brought up one of his illegitimate children with her family when she commented, "Oor Rab should have had 2 wives." One of his longest affairs was with Agnes Macklehose. It was for her that Burns wrote A Fond Kiss to mark the severing of his relationship with her in favour of Jean Armour. "A Fond Kiss, and then we sever. A fair wheel, alas forever. Deep in heart wrung tears of pledge, worrying sighs and groans await thee. Now, Burns had a tremendous affiliation with women. Some of his greatest works were dedicated to women. 2/3 of his songs were about love and romance. The sky was blue, the wind was still, the moon was shining clearly. I set her doon where I could will among the rigs of barley. I kent her heart was all my ain. I loved her, may sincerely. I kissed her, now and ever again, among the rigs of barley. Burns never lost the common touch or forgot his roots. He was a man who was the hit of the season for 2 years, holding court under the crystal chandeliers of Edinburgh's New Town. A man who had come from the humblest of backgrounds to become the champion of the common man. Remember, it was a world of privilege and position, poverty and injustice that Burns constantly condemned. His writing became the voice of the people, and he expressed the thoughts and hopes of the people. The message of Robert Burns is a message of fellowship, friendship, but above all, is a message for me of love. His writing is as relevant today as when it was written over 200 years ago. No figure in world literature has ever written with such compassion for his fellow man. Burns himself said, "Whatever mitigates the woes or increases the happiness of others, this is my criterion of goodness. But whatever injures society at large or any individual in it, then this is my measure of iniquity." He died at the age of 37. He had become seriously ill with rheumatic fever. It is believed that he was given mercury ointment before it was known to be poisonous. He then followed his doctor's misguided instructions and immersed himself in the ice cold waters of the Solway Firth. 3 days later, not surprisingly, he died. Jean did not attend the funeral. She was giving birth to his last son. With unconscious irony, she called him Maxwell after Burns' doctor. His achievements in such a short space of time, ladies and gentlemen, can only be marvelled at. If he had lived longer, who can tell the dizzy heights he may have reached? Yet Burns lives on. He lives on for many reasons. Principal among them is that wherever we Scots go, we have taken the Pope with us. Wherever Scots have gone in the world throughout the great immigrations of the 18th, 19th and 20th centuries, the poet's works will be packed alongside the family's worldly goods. Put simply, whatever the circumstances, Burns had a verse to offer hope and salvation when all else seemed lost. Robert Burns' works have been translated into at least 56 languages and published in more than 2,000 editions. There are more statues of Robert Burns throughout the world than there are other figures in literature. The English might have Shakespeare, the Germans have Goethe, the Italians have Dante, and the Americans have Longfellow. None of them received the kind of homage that is accorded to Burns. Every year since 1801, wherever friends meet and eat, the name of Robert Burns is revered. We can read the words of Burns today and feel something of what he felt then. We can become a part of him as he remains from year to year a part of us. Ladies and gentlemen, could you please charge your glasses? And join me, if you will, in raising those glasses. I give you the proudest of Scottish toasts of them all. The immortal memory of Robert Burns. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Willie, for that most enjoyable immortal memory. Ladies and gentlemen, West Sound's young Burnsian will be announced shortly, but let's take this opportunity to thank Isa Hanley, convener of the school's committee of the Robert Burns World Federation, for all her help in organising that event. Thank you, Isa. And I'd like to invite West Sound Greatest Hits Breakfast Show presenter Alan Edwards to the stage to tell us about the Young Burnsian competition and the 2014 winner. Welcome to Alan.
Thank you, Willie. This is, in fact, the first time I've stood on stage at a Burns event since, I think, Primary 2, when I got my certificate for Robin was a roving boy, ranting, roving, ranting, roving. Robin was a roving boy, ranting, roving, Robin. And after the first verse, that was kind of enough for you to do your bit. I'm pleased to say that the quality of the work done by the young Burnsian and the junior Burnsian is far higher. And we're about to see that tonight as we introduce a very remarkable young individual. Now, the competition is primarily put together by the Robert Burns World Foundation to invite young people of primary and secondary school age to take part and recognise the works of our national bard, whether that be through music, song or poetry. It's open to young people the length and breadth of the country to take part. And West Sound is proud to have a long association with the competition, and giving these young people a platform to perform the works of our national bard in front of an audience who are appreciative of his works and life. And it's remarkable to see that so many of them are enthusiastic in taking part and are privileged to do so in front of an audience who appreciate his work, a work that still stands the test of time in today's busy and exciting lifestyles that we all have. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm proud to introduce tonight the 2014 Young Burnsian of the Year, Scott Figgins.
Wow. Well done, Scott. What a talent, ladies and gentlemen. Now, it wouldn't be a West Sound Burns supper, ladies and gentlemen, without some of the Bard's poetry. And I'm delighted to say that one of his best-known works, To a Moose, will be performed by Robert Burns himself. Over to Robert.
Good evening. I trust you're all well. One cold winter's morning, whilst ploughing the field, I turned up a mouse asleep in her nest, looking down at this pale, shaken creature whose home I had left in ruin. I couldn't help but reflect on the contrast between the mouse's fate and that of our ain. Wee, sleekit, cowering, timorous beastie, oh, what a panic's in thy breastie. Thou needna start the war, say hasty, wi' bicker and brattle. Oh, I would be laith to rin and chase thee wi' murder and pattle. I'm truly sorry. Man's dominion has broken nature's social union and justifies that ill opinion which makes thee startle at me, thy pale earth-born companion and fellow mortal. I doubt na whiles, but thou may thieve. Ach, what then, pale beastie? Thou maun live, a daemon icker in a thrave's a sma' request. I'll get a blessing with a lave, and never miss it. Thy wee bit hoosie, too, in ruin, it's silly was the winds are strewing, and naething now to big anewing o' foggage green, and bleak December's winds ensuing, be snell and keen. Thou saw the fields laid bare and waste, and weary winter coming fast, and cosy here beneath the blast thou thought to dwell, till crash the cruel coulter passed out through thy cell. That wee bit heap o' leaves and stibble has cost thee many a weary nibble. Now thou's turned out for all thy trouble, but house or hald, to thole the winter sleety dribble and cran ruach cald. Ach, but mousie, thou art no thy lane, in proving foresight may be vain. See, the best laid schemes o' mice and men gang after glee, and lee us not but grief and pain for promised joy. Still, thou art blessed compared with me. The present only toucheth thee. But och, I backward cast my ee on prospects drear, and forward, though I canna see, I guess and fear.
Thank you very much indeed. Now, it's my great pleasure, ladies and gentlemen, to introduce a delightful young lady from Stirling, Megan Adams. Megan is one of the Poppy Girls, a group of school girls whose fathers were in the armed forces. The group, as some of you may have seen, have performed for the Queen, for the Prime Minister, and now Megan has the chance to charm the First Minister of Scotland with one of Burns' most beautiful songs, Ye Banks and Braes.
Oh, bonnie Doon, how
Next up on the programme is the toast to the laddies. A very dangerous assignment. But we're in capable hands this evening, because to propose that toast, it's my very great pleasure to welcome the First Minister of Scotland, the Right Honourable Nicola Sturgeon, MSP.
Thank you very much indeed, Mr. Chairman. I quite like this idea of doing a toast to the laddies instead of a reply from the lassies, because it gives me the first word. The downside is I don't get the last word, and I don't like that quite so much. It is absolutely fantastic to be here this evening at West Sound's Burn Supper. West Sound really, in many ways, is where it all started for me. My first ever Saturday job while I was still at school was at West Sound. I used to answer the phones on the Saturday afternoon sports phone-in. I've actually reached an agreement with West Sound this evening. If it all goes wrong for me in politics, I'm getting that job back. So you never know what might happen. It is great to be here this evening, and it is wonderful to see everybody looking so glamorous. The women are looking all right as well. but women, ladies, you are all looking wonderful. So I hope the men in the room tonight are being duly appreciative, because men don't always appreciate women as much as they should. Am I right, ladies?
Yes.
I'm reminded of a story of a very good friend of mine who married a guy that, how can I put this, had a fairly good conceit of himself. And after they'd been married for round about a year, he decided to tell my friend that he thought she had let herself go a little bit, that she'd put on some weight since they had got married, and he wasn't very happy about this. So my friend, who is fair to say is no shrinking violet, thought about this for a little while and then said in response, "Well, darling, it's just like this. When I was young, free and single, I used to go out for a night on the town with my friends. We'd have a few drinks, have a good laugh. I'd come in after a good night out. I'd look in the fridge, see nothing I fancied, and head straight to bed. Since I married you, I'll go out for a night in the town, have a few drinks. I come home, I look in the bed, I see nothing I fancy, and I head straight to the fridge." And that is why I may have gained a little weight since we tied the knot. Strangely, they're no longer together. A couple of years after that, she won the lottery, and she shouted up the stairs that she'd won the lottery, and he shouted down, "That's fantastic. Will I pack for the beach or the ski slopes?" And she shouted back up, "I don't care where you go, just get out of my house." So it didn't end particularly well. It was once suggested to me, ladies, that Burns Night was that one time of year when it was perfectly appropriate for us ladies to publicly slag off men without having to worry too much about it. Personally, I hadn't been aware there was a time of year when that wasn't entirely appropriate. So it just goes to show you learn something new every day. Who can blame us, though, for occasionally taking the opportunity to get our own back? As that famous man Joseph Conrad once said, "Being a woman is a terribly difficult task because it consists principally of dealing with men." And I think there's a lot of truth in that. And of course, everybody here, I'm assuming, knows the definition of a bachelor. It is a man who has missed out on the opportunity to make some woman completely and utterly miserable. And talking of one of the ways in which men, I'm not referring to my own dear husband here, just in case anybody thinks I might be, talking of one of the ways in which men often make us completely and utterly miserable, you know the reason that the female black widow spider kills the male spider after mating? It is to stop the snoring before it starts. I think I might pay for that later on in some way. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, I'm not going to do this rather cliched thing of doing this entire toast to the laddies somehow suggesting that men are all completely stupid. Because, you know, there is absolutely no truth to the suggestion that the formal name for a man who has lost 95% of his intelligence is divorced. So I'm not going to do this, you know, trying to pretend that men are all daft. It's just that you always know when a man is about to say something intelligent, don't you? I know some of you may never have experienced this before, but you always know when a guy's about to say something smart because he starts the sentence, "A woman once told me," and that is the giveaway. It's It's often said that women don't work as hard as men in life. And I have to say, that is entirely true. We don't work as hard as you do, guys, because we don't have to. We usually get it right first time round. A good pal of mine who, I have to say, is much, much less charitable to the male of the species than I am, once suggested that men had much in common with babies' nappies. She said that they both needed changed very often and for exactly the same reason. And I think she probably had a point. Though, in my humble opinion, the biggest problem with men is they just don't really understand. They have never quite worked out how to make us happy. You know, I've tried over the years, and I have to say I've failed, to get my own husband to understand these two very basic secrets to a happy and peaceful marriage. And they are really simple. This is not rocket science, guys. It goes exactly like this. Number one, when you are wrong, you should be a man and admit that you are wrong. And number two, when you are right, you should just shut up. Those are the two secrets of a happy marriage. Anyway, this is, of course, burn season, and at this time of year, it's very common to compare the modern-day average Scottish bloke, is there any other type, but average Scottish bloke, to our national bard, Robert Burns. What does the modern Scottish man have in common with our national bard? Well, it's often said, and it's well known, in fact, that Robbie had a fondness for whiskey, women and conversation. And roughly translated as booze, birds and boasting, that just about sums up the average Scottish man. And of course, with booze, birds and boasting, you very, very rarely get one without the other. I mean, it can't have escaped the notice of any woman alive today that there is a direct, and I mean direct, correlation between how much a man drinks and how irresistibly attractive he thinks he is to the opposite sex. I'm sure I can already see some signs of that in here this evening. You know, maybe I'm being just a little bit cruel here tonight. It's probably time that I stop being so nasty to the men in the audience, not least because there is an election looming. After all, it's not their fault that we find them so entertaining. It's just that men and women are basically and fundamentally different. You know, we talk different languages. When a woman says she's feeling vulnerable, she means that she is opening up emotionally to another. When a man says that he's feeling vulnerable, he means that he's playing football without a jockstrap. It is entirely, entirely different. Margaret Atwood, who's one of my very favourite authors, once said that we all still think of a powerful man as a born leader and a powerful woman as an anomaly. Robert Burns, of course, he knew entirely differently. He had, as we heard in that wonderful immortal memory earlier on, he had a hatred of rank and privilege. And that hatred was reflected in Thomas Paine's The Rights of Man. But it was Robert Burns who in 1792 wrote The Rights of Women. And we know differently too. We always get the last word in an argument, because anything a guy says after that is the start of an entirely different argument. Another rule that I think, guys, it's always useful to remember. And of course, when after God created man, he or maybe she, you never know, after God created man, he said, "I must do better." Or as the bard put it, so much more eloquently than I could ever imagine. "Old nature swears the lovely dears, her noblest work she classes o. Her prentice hand she tried on man, and then she made the lassies o." So who would be a man? You know, even the things guys criticise us for always tend somehow to be their fault. And I'm going to give you one example of this. What's the thing men most often criticise us women for? I didn't want heckling. The men in the audience, if you can learn to be seen and not heard, that would be much appreciated for the remainder of this session. What is the thing we get most criticised for? We're not good drivers. And in particular, we struggle when it comes to parking cars proficiently. Well, ladies, bear with me on this, because we have to admit some truth to this. But there is a good reason why women can't park cars properly. It's because we don't really have any accurate sense of measurement. And do you know why that is? We have spent our entire adult lives being reliably informed that is 6 inches. And that's why we can't park a car. Anyway, I think I better start to think about quitting while I'm ahead, or not, as the case may be. But just to end this evening, and just to, I don't know, powerfully illustrate this point that women somehow always end up getting the better of men, I thought I'd end with another true story about a friend of mine and her husband. My friend was complaining one night that he did nothing, absolutely nothing, around the house. She said, "Why don't you change that bulb in the hall? We've had no light in this house since Tuesday." And he said, "Look, Dav, Scottish Power stamped in my forehead." And then she said, "Look, okay, well, can you look at the television? It's not been working properly for weeks. I'm missing the X Factor and Strictly. Haven't you seen EastEnders for ages?" And he said, "Have I got Comet stamped in my forehead?" So she's getting a bit exasperated now, and she says, "Look, at least fix the garden gate. The dog keeps getting out of the garden and running away, and by this time he's getting, you know, a wee bit annoying, as sometimes they've got a habit of doing." And he says, "Look, Dav, Bob the Builder stamped in my forehead," at which point he decided he was going to go to the pub. So he was coming home later on after a few beers in the pub. He was feeling a wee bit guilty, so was thinking about how he was going to make things up to my friend. And he gets home, opens the garden gate, working absolutely fine, goes in to the house, puts the light on, working perfectly, television on in the room. So he says to her, "What happened? Did you fix all these things yourself?" And she said, "No, it was just like this. After you left, I was really upset. And I was sitting on the front step out in the garden, and I was crying, and this guy walked past and asked me what was wrong. So I told him, and he said, 'Well, look, I'll come in and do all the repairs for you.' So he did that. And at the end, he said, 'You can pay me in one of two ways. You can go to bed with me, or you can bake me a cake.' So my friend's husband said, 'What kind of cake did you bake him?' And she looked at him and said, 'Have I got Delia Smith stamped in my forehead?'" Ladies, we struggle sometimes to live with them, but we certainly couldn't live without them. So please charge your glasses, be upstanding, and join me in a toast to the laddies.
Thank you very much, First Minister. Judging by that speech, things have certainly changed since the days of my unreconstructed Ayrshire father. I told my mother on the day he married her, "I love you, I've always loved you, I always will love you, now let's hear no more about it." And I wish that was a joke, but... And I can also tell you, First Minister, that West Sound are delighted to have had you along here this evening, and they're relieved that they've only had to feed you instead of your predecessor. Robert Burns wrote or rewrote hundreds of songs, and we're about to hear two of them performed in his own inimitable style by one of Scotland's favourite singers, the legend that is Dougie MacLean. Over to you, Dougie.
Hello. It's wonderful to be here at this magnificent Burns Supper. I'm going to start off with one of Burns' gems, and this is one of the songs that we all learn in school, you know. And I used to hate this song at school, you know. And it wasn't until many years later that I realised it wasn't the song that I hated, it was the way that the music teacher, the way it was sung. And it was a song called Green Grow the Rushes, and it was always done a kind of, Green Grow the Rushes, Green Grow the Rushes, you know what I mean? And I looked at the song, and actually it's beautiful words, you know, and beautiful. So I slowed it down and made my own little version of it. And now people sing it this way a lot more than the other way. So we'll see how we got on. There's naught but care on every hand, and every hour that passes, signifies the worth, oh man, 'twas nae for the lassies, oh. Green grow the rushes, oh, green grow the rushes, oh. The sweetest hours that e'er I spent were spent among the lassies, oh. Sing it with me, go on. Green grow the rushes, oh. Green grow the rushes, oh. The sweetest hours that e'er I spent were spent among the lassies, oh. Worldly race may riches chase, and riches still may fly them, oh. When at last they catch them fast, their heads can ne'er enjoy them, oh. Green grow the rushes, oh. Green grow the rushes. The sweetest hours that e'er I spent were spent among the lassies, oh. Give me a canteuratine, my arms about my dearie, oh. Worldly cares and worldly men may all get up so teary. Green grow the rushes, oh. Green grow the rushes, oh. The sweetest hours that e'er I spent were spent among the lassies, oh. Signifies the worth, oh man, and 'twas nae for the lassies, oh. Make a bit of noise, go on. Green grow the rushes, oh. Green grow the rushes, oh. The sweetest hours that e'er I spent were spent among the lassies. And a wee bit louder. Green grow the rushes, oh. Green grow the rushes, oh.
the stars in air I spent were spent among the last.
It sounds so fantastic, I think you should sing it on your own. Really. Go on your own track.
Green grove.
Thank you very much. This is my 40th year as a professional travelling troubadour songwriter, and feel very lucky that in my youth that I had kind of Burns and all the beautiful songs there as a kind of role model, you know. And the Americans had Bob Dylan, and we had Robbie Burns. You know. And I'll sing another one of his gems, and I just did this. So we'll try it, see how we go on. Fair and lovely as thou art, you he stole my very heart. I can die, but can
canny part, my bonny dearie, call the owls, take the nows, call them war, the heather grouse, call them war, the barney rouse, my bonnie dee.
It sounds like you want to sing that. We'll do that again. We're going to sing it.
Call the owls, take the nows, call them war, the heather grouse, call them war, the barney rouse, my bonnie
Thank you very much. I'll be back in a wee minute. Thank you.
Thank you, Doogie. Fabulous as always. Doogie will be back later. Now for a subject close to the bard's heart, the lassies. To Tostam, let's welcome a new face to the West Sound Burn Supper, one of the country's busiest after-dinner speakers, Peter Brown. Peter is very keen on his golf. I met him at Glen Eagles at the Ryder Cup in September. Glen Eagles, the place you go to if you want to find out what price a Diet Coke will be in 2018. Peter's a fair golfer, if you keep your eye on him. And he's actually written a great wee book for the golfers in the audience. This is a wee cracker. This will cut your handicap. It's called How to Hit a Top Flight from the Rough When You've Hit a Titleist from the Tee. A great wee book. But Peter's got a fair working knowledge of the lassies. I've worked with them many times, and I can tell you that you're in for a treat, ladies and gentlemen. Mr. Peter Brown.
Thank you, Willie, for that kind introduction. Ladies and gentlemen, the history books will tell us that he was a charmer, a drunk, and perhaps even a womaniser. But let me tell you, there's much more to Willie Young than that. I love speaking at the Thistle Hotel. I've spoke here about 10 times in the last 3 years, and you may not know this, but when there's a function on here, just to the right of the front door, there's a wee blind guy sits selling matches. And over the last 3 years, when I walked past him, I've thrown £2 in his box and never taken any matches. And tonight when I come in, he must have a sixth sense because he's blind, because as I threw £2 in his box, he grabbed my wrist. He said, "Excuse me, sir, are you the man that over the last 3 years has been walking past me throwing £2 in my box and not taking any matches?" I says, "I am, son." He says, "Well, they've gone up." I love the Glasgow humour. Old Jimmy Thompson's lying in the hospital, and by his bed are the four lasses in his life and the staff nurse. With his last breath, he turns to Irene, his daughter. He says, "Irene, you have all the property up at Bear's Den." He said, "Jean, you take the flats down at the Clyde. And Wilma, you can have the offices at George Square. And Molly, my trusting and faithful wife, you have the residential property up at Giffnock, and then he gently slips away. The staff nurse turned to Molly. She says, your man must have worked many a long hour to accumulate a property portfolio like that. She said, property? He had a paper round. The lassies, God bless them. Where would we be without them? It's a wildly held view that a woman can make an average man great and a great man average. The lassies provided the inspirations for so many of Byrne's finest works. But far from being chauvinistic or sexist, Byrne's believed in the rights of women and held them socially and intellectually as equals. Personally, ladies, I don't think you will ever be equal to men until you can walk down the street with a beer belly, a tattoo in your neck, and a bald head, and still think you're sexy. Standing before you this evening is a man well qualified to talk about the lassies. I've been married twice, had a few girlfriends, a few lovers, and obviously all in the name of research, of course. But then who am I trying to kid? Perhaps I should continue the research if I truly want to understand the minds of the lassies. Last September, Willie mentioned the Ryder Cup there. I was lying on the couch on the Sunday. It was coming to the squeaky bum time where it was getting exciting, and my partner walked into the lounge. She says, Peter, do you fancy going upstairs for half an hour? I am feeling a tad amorous. I said, I'm watching the Ryder Cup, darling. She says, you can record it. I says, lovely. You look out the camcorder and I'll be up in about an hour. Robert Burns, of course, didn't have the luxury of a camcorder or any of our modern technology, nor did he need it. His work was created in his brilliant mind and translated into verse of outstanding beauty, describing the many wonderful women he immortalized. In one of his early letters to his brother Gilbert, he wrote, my heart was completely tender, and I was eternally lit up by some goddess or other. As you read his prose and verse, you soon realize that in Byrne's eyes, every woman he loved was a flawless beauty with an equally flawless character. And he loved women of intellect, for he was aware that beauty is only skin deep and short-lived. The charms of the men, the languor they shine, the main admiration they draw man, whilst peaches and cherries and roses and lilies, they fade and they wither a woman. I am so like Burns when it comes to women. He was a true romantic, so am I. I wrote a poem when I was 17, and I would like to read it to you this evening, ladies and gentlemen. I was on holiday in Ibiza, and it was my first ever date. It's called, Hey, Wait a Minute. Now, it's not quite Tam O'Shanter, but it does tell a story, so here we go. You look stunning as you walk towards me, so graceful, so beautiful, so complete. Those red rosy cheeks and lips of fire, your massive size 10 feet. That giant Adam's apple, hey, wait a minute. For a man who had an incredible ability to judge character, Robert Burns wore rose-coloured spectacles as far as his women were concerned. I can be like that sometimes. I remember taking this girlfriend back to my flat. It was our second date, so I really wanted to let her see how romantic I could be. I spread roses all over the bed sheet. She was quite a big lass, so I made sure there was a lot of toffee ones. She said to me, "Peter, I have to be honest and tell you, we won't be going all the way in this relationship for at least 6 months." I said, "I completely understand, honey, and I respect you for being so honest. So what I'll do is I'll get back in touch with you nearer the time." I think I've just proved that us men are not always perfect, even Burns. As Willie said in his immortal memory, his wife Jean Armour recognised this and said, "Rab should he 12 wives." How accommodating is that, gentlemen? I tried that. My first wife divorced me because I had wanted a kid for about 5 years, but she was wanting it for life. My second wife asked me for a divorce on her birthday. I said I wasn't planning on spending that much. Robert Burns himself expressed his respect for the sanctity of marriage when he wrote these lines: "That hackneyed judge of human life, the preacher and the king, observes the man who gets a wife, he gets a noble thing." My good friend Willie Allen once told me the perfect wife was one who cooked and cleaned all day, spent all evening pandering to your every desire, and then at midnight turned into a fish supper. Robert Burns had many loves in his life. Oh, how a mobile phone would have been handy in all those days. All that secret texting. Mind you, it's important when texting that your wife or partner has a sense of humour. I texted Shona last week and I said, "I'm in the pub, darling. I'm just having another pint with Tommy. I'll be home in 30 minutes. And if I'm not, just read the text again." She wasn't the best pleased, I have to say. Well, lads, as I have said, Robert Burns wrote numerous love songs and poems about the lassies. I would like to end tonight by quoting the last verse of a song, which indeed was just sung there 2 seconds ago, but it pays the ultimate compliment to the lassies in their lives. "Old nature swears the lovely dears, her noblest work she classes o'er. Her prentice hand she tried on man, and then she made the lasses o." Gentlemen, fill your glasses right to the top, and please be upstanding and join me in a toast to the lasses. Thank you.
Well done, Peter, you old charmer. Yes. Thank you very much for that. Ladies and gentlemen, it's a tradition at West Sound Burns Suppers that we all sing the next song together. The song is, of course, that favourite played brilliantly by John Carmichael and his colleagues, the Staro Rabbi Burns. The words will appear.
There's a star whose beaming ray is shed on every clime. It shines by night, it shines by day, and ne'er grows dim with time. It rolls upon the banks so air, it shone.
You had your wee bit of exercise. Let me welcome back Dougie MacLean to sing a song, that he has made famous the world over, Caledonia.
Hello again. Yeah, I was told I would get lynched if I didn't sing this song tonight down here. You know, so. And it's a wee homesick song that I made on a beach when I was in my early 20s. And it's now become this kind of lovable monster. You know, it's sung at football games and rugby matches. It's played by pipe bands, brass bands. But it's a lovely thing as a songwriter to have a song that becomes part of common culture like that, when people actually use it in their everyday lives, you know, for their... for the times when they're happy and the times when they're sad. So we'll do it now. I don't know if you can see the changes that have come over me. In these last few days, I've been afraid that I might drift away. So I've been telling old stories, singing songs that make me think about where I came from. That's the reasons why I seem so far away today. Oh, and let me tell you that I love you, and I think about you all the time. Caledonia, you're calling me, now I'm going home. For if I should become a stranger,
you know that it would make me more than sad. Caledonia's been everything I've ever had. Oh, and I have moved and have kept on moving, proved the points that I needed proving, lost the friends that I needed losing, found others on the way. Oh, and I have tried and have kept on trying, I've stolen dreams, yes, there's no denying. I travel hard with conscience flying somewhere with the wind. Oh, but let me tell you that I love you, and I think about you all the time. Caledonia, you're calling me, now I'm going home. For if I should become a stranger, you know that it would make me more than sad. Caledonia's been everything I've ever. Sitting here before the fire, the empty room, the forest choir, the flames that couldn't get any higher, they've withered now, they've gone. But I'm steady thinking, my way is clear, and I know what I will do tomorrow when the hands have shaken, kisses float, well, I will disappear. Oh, and let me tell you that I love you, that I think about you all the time. Caledonia, you're calling me, now I'm going home. For if I should become a stranger, you know that it would make me more than sad. Caledonia's been everything I've ever had.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Doogie. A very special song and a very special evening for West Sound. We're nearing the close, ladies and gentlemen, and we'll now have that great universal song of parting, which Doogie will lead, a song that has been adopted as the world's anthem. Burns wrote, "There is an old song and tune which has often thrilled through my soul. I shall give you the verses on the other sheet." The song on the other sheet was Auld Lang Syne.
Should old acquaintance be forgot and never brought to mind? Should old acquaintance be forgot and days of old lang syne? For old lang syne, my dear, for old lang syne, we'll tak a cup o' kindness yet for we twa hae run aboot the brace and put the gowans fine. But we've wandered many is the weary fit since all that sight. And we twa he piddled in the barn frae morn and sun till dine. Oh, but seas between us braid he roared since days of all lang syne. For all lang syne, my dear, for all lang syne, we'll tack up, oh kindness yet, for all lang
gentlemen.